This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.
David Morgan with you with the weekly perspective for the week ending 17 November 2017. First article up from Bloomberg Markets. Millionaire bankers feel sorry for struggling millennials. A very interesting title, talking about the wealth discrepancy, how the millennials are not apt to achieve higher levels of wealth than their parents. First time that's happened in quite some time. And the highlights of the report, North America and Europe together accounted for 64% of total household wealth, but only 17% of the adult population. The UK was an underperformer in the past year, with wealth per adult up 2% in local currency terms, and the richest 1% account for half of total household wealth. I'd like to remind everyone that 2 billion people on this planet survive on $2 a day or less. So even though these bankers are tearfully talking about the struggling millennials and feeling sorry for them, let's please put this in proper perspective, that certainly the discrepancy in wealth is greater than it's ever been. And when those things happen, there are repercussions. To quote Gerald Celente, when you have nothing to lose, you lose it. So I think we should bear that in mind. And moving on, there's nothing stopping the Bitcoin and crypto worlds from achieving new highs, and on they go. And certainly, I've been neutral to probably a little bearish down in the price. I've certainly on record in a video that was shot at the conference in, I think, early this year, I spoke about Bitcoin and it had a long ways to go to the upside. So I'm on record for that. And I still think it has further to go to the upside. There are some concerns, and I'll get to that later in this update. But this is from CNBC, not me. And the title is, one of Asia's largest banks says Bitcoin is a Ponzi scheme. There's a video that goes along with this, but one of Asia's largest bank is of the opinion that Bitcoin is currently a financial scam. This is from the group chief information officer that reported, who operates a DBS, and he talked to CNBC on Wednesday. Bitcoin transactions are incredibly expensive, and all that fees are hidden through the crypto mechanism. So what he's talking about here is the cost of running electricity to the miners, and also the fact that you get about 7 transactions per second, whereas with a Visa card, I think it's like 40,000 transactions per second. Yes, it's forked, and yes, they're addressing the situation, and I try to stay on top of this and don't claim to be an expert, but nonetheless, and I'll move into it, I was on the crypto panel in Australia at the PMIS conference, and I just returned about a week ago. And during that panel discussion, I brought up the fact that I did still have some concerns because early investors in Bitcoin came through InQtel, which is a CIA-run venture capital firm. And almost anybody knows that. In fact, it's my suspicion that not only were they involved with Bitcoin early on, but probably Google and Facebook as well. So that gives me pause right away. And then what I wrote about in my one article in the public domain, my 2 bits about Bitcoin, my main thrust of that was given to me or thrown at me in a nice way very much at this conference was that anytime there's a competitor to the banking cartel at large that's able to dictate, you know, create something for nothing, basically currency for very little friction, they don't like competition. And at this point, Bitcoin has become competition, unless the very root of it came out of this CIA white paper that talked about cryptocurrencies. InQtel, that invested early in it, is still guiding it. And so I don't know the answer to this. I bring this up to have you question what the involvement is from anyone, including the deep state. Does it exist? If so, how deep is it? And move on from there. The other thing, of course, is the transactions that I mentioned a moment ago, but how many kilowatt hours does it take for these miners to produce a Bitcoin as time goes on, because the algorithm gets tougher and tougher to solve? And that's a question that very few that I know of are addressing it. The amount of the blockchain to produce back in 2012 was about 2 gigabytes of energy, and now, processing. And now 2013, so from 2012 to went to 9 gigabytes. So as this thing continues to evolve, and I know it can be forked and I know it can be changed, but as it stands right now, it could be in the terabyte level to mine an ample amount of Bitcoin. So there are some flaws in it, the way I see it. Again, I'm doing this to make you think about it. I'm not anti, I'm free market. You think Bitcoin is the greatest thing in the world, go for it. If you think there's some problems, or there might be something up the road, so to speak, you might start thinking about your position if you have one. And if you don't have one, if you want to take one at this point in time, it's totally up to you. So I'm going to just take a few minutes to the end of this weekly perspective. I try to keep them at 10 to 15 minutes. This was a press release from Thomson Reuters, who publishes the Silver Survey for the Silver Institute. This came out on the 15th. Thomson Reuters, and I won't read you the whole thing. The main crux of this whole thing is right here. At the beginning, silver markets expected to switch from a small annual physical surplus of 32.2 million ounces in 2017 after posting annual physical shortfalls of four consecutive years. Net inflows into the ETP holdings are expected to reach about 15 million this year, while we are likely to see 18.5 million ounces drop into the global exchange inventory build on a year-on-year basis. So basically what this says, or the way I read it anyway, is that, you know, we are seeing a small build in the inventory of silver. So from going from a deficit to a slight surplus. And this brings me to the free webinar. You can Google this. Is there a silver shortage? This is a evergreen webinar that I did some time ago, and it still stands, and it'll address what I'm going to talk about here further into this podcast. The first thing, and this is the Cliff Notes version of that webinar I suggest you attend, but basically there's a deficit from 1990 to 2006, and at that time, the supply exceeded the demand in all forms. And so there's really a misnomer between this deficit that the Silver Institute keeps talking about. And this is a slide from the slide deck that I gave at the New Orleans conference. And this is from the same exact people that I just read you about this 32.2 million ounces. This is from the World Survey 2017, their latest publication, and it involves everything through and inclusive of the last day of 2016. Quote, identifiable above ground stocks increased 14% year on year to 2.59 or 2.6 billion ounces by the end of last year, which means 2016. These inventories could cover 30 months worth of physical demand, a 21 year peak. End quote. So Thomson Reuters, that just put out that press release on the 15th I just read you, also in their annual silver survey, tells you this. So the truth of the matter is that inventories have been building from a low of about 500 million ounces to about 2 billion ounces more than that over the last 11 years. To, again, about 2.5, 2.6 billion ounces. That's the build that's taken place. So when they tell you every year that there's a silver deficit, what does that mean? And I suggest you read their definition of deficit. It's one of these things that's politically correct, but actually factually very misleading. It's just like, what is the cash cost of silver? Well, if the cash cost of silver is $2 and you buy a mine whose cash cost is $2, you would maybe presume that you have seen a cash cost of two and that the mining of silver is at 17 and you have a $15 per ounce profit. But the cash cost is absolutely, totally, completely misleading and meaningless. It's the all-in sustaining cost is what you have to evaluate. And from that perspective, you can evaluate whether $17 silver is profitable for that particular company or not. The same thing here. The way that the Silver Institute defines deficit is, in my view, inaccurate, because what we've been seeing, again, is on an average basis, you've seen about 100 million ounce per year annual buildup of silver. In fact, more than that over the last decade or more. So this Now the question comes, well, if silver is no longer in a deficit, is it a good investment? And that's a very, very good question. And I will take the next few minutes to answer that question. So here is the deficit that we've seen in silver from 1990 to 2006. You can take your particular year that you're interested in and get a feel for it. Before, like in 1997, there was a deficit of almost 200 million ounces that particular year. And then, as I said, 2006, you started to see this build up, you know, 40 million, 50, 60 million, 150 million. This is on an annual basis. But what's interesting, and my point, is that when we were at this low, look at what the price of silver was. And the price of silver at that point in time was roughly $12 an ounce. So when silver inventories were at their lowest in our lifetime, the price was only 12. But when the inventory had built up for 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10, going into 11, and the price peaked at around $50 nominal, the inventory had been building for 5 or 6 years. And so really, the supply-demand thing is not understood well by a lot of silver analysts. My friend Steve St. Angelo, I think, makes a very good point about this whole idea of, you know, is supply and demand a driver? So here's the wrap-up. If you're worried about the above-ground stockpile of silver increasing over the last decade or more, and you believe that gold is a sound investment because of fill in the blank, then you have to look at both these markets through the same lens, which means that gold inventory is always building above ground supplies. Yes, there could be a deficit by the definition of what these mining companies or the World Gold Survey or some fund manager calls a deficit. But the truth of the matter is gold inventory has been building from time immemorial to present day. Silver, that's not the case. 15 years of a deficit, now 11 years of a build. And you can see it from this chart that I put up. If you're watching the video of this and not just listening to the podcast, you can see that there were times back in the 60s where it was building and times from in the 70s where we had a very similar thing to what we have seen most recently. So the idea is that if you're buying gold as a safe haven, most people that buy it for investment buy it for the same reason. And so that should not negate in any way, shape, or form the ability to think through why you are buying this asset, because basically silver is a wealth preserver just as gold is, although it's outside the establishment. The establishment, the banks, have been net buyers of gold for quite some time. They shun silver because they don't have enough of it and the price is so low. But as far as protecting one's assets from a currency destruction, silver does a very good job and probably has more price appreciation ahead than does gold. And finally, moving on to the mining side, this is a slide that I presented down at the PMIS Precious Metals Investment Symposium in Australia, and it shows my favorite speculation, and yes, I own it, full disclaimer. Over on the left is the mobile mill project that I was promoting quite heavily at one point in time, and there were some issues with not the company and not the process, but some of the early investors. I don't have time to go into that, but let's just say that there was a lot of selling into the market that we didn't expect. That's been resolved a long time ago. In the middle and to the right, there was, while I was evaluating the mobile mill project for over 2 years before I ever mentioned the Morgan Report, Dwayne talked to me about a possibility of a new reagent. And this has been a spinoff that's basically targeted for both the electronic waste sector and the mining sector, both, primarily the electronic waste sector. And this continues to do quite well. In fact, the people that were on the mastermind that were able to participate in the early financing are up substantially from their original investment. Still restricted stock because they have to hold it under the rules. And I expect to see the appreciation in this further. In fact, this just hit my buy limit. I had a buy limit and I actually moved it up almost double from what it was because the company is changing before our eyes. There's a Fortune 500 company that's become very involved and some other things that I won't mention. So just to move further on to this situation, this is an idea for everyone on a very, very strong gold mine and what you produce from a ton of ore and what you can get out of the e-waste sector. And those relative comparisons in those pictures are actually pretty accurate. Depends what your e-waste consists of course, so I want to be clear on that. But nonetheless, some of these electronic waste situations, such as RAM fingers, as an example, are extremely lucrative on a per ton basis, much more so than almost any gold mine in the world. So leave it at that. I will not. I want to state that there are really like two companies here. There's the mobile mill company, and the spin out was the e-waste company, I'll call it. And there's actually an arbitrage opportunity for people that's pretty easy to determine. And of course, I'll be writing about that in the next month's issue of the Morgan Report, and probably will do it as an update for our premium subscribers so that they're aware of how to participate. And it's certainly way early. We are the only service of our type that's even mentioned anything about this breakthrough on this reagent that basically will be, in my view, a replacement for cyanide heap leaching. It's a system that does similar to cyanide without any ill effects because it is inert. You could actually drink it. Not that you would, but you could. So that's it for this week's Weekly Perspective. We certainly like any help that you could to share, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or spread the word on this podcast. Silver is certainly not very popular. It's underloved, it's underfollowed, and it's understood, if I can say that. So I'll be back with you next week with a new Weekly Perspective.
This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.